Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie the Podcast.
Welcome to Racism the Podcast.
Oh, boy. Welcome to Movie the Podcast. That's right, Movie the Podcast. We got to watch, what's his name? It's not Philip K. Dick, but he's a three. He's one of those.
It's Philip K. Dick.
What is dude's name? I was F. Scott Fitzgerald. C. Thomas Howell's Soul Man, as we continue our journey across the stars. And what a movie. Like, yeah. A movie that we will get into it. And I'm gonna put this energy out there. I get confused
with Anthony Michael Hall all the time too. Apparently was offered this role, by the way.
Oh, well, there you go. This movie, which I'll keep it a buck. I didn't hate.
I also didn't hate it.
But it just, I was very confused.
It's mad problematic.
It's also just kind of bland. It's like a comedy that's not funny.
And except for the makeup.
That was funny. Like, it's unintentionally funny, but like, it also like, I don't know, we'll get into it. But like, I said it in the analog, I said it in the group text. This movie is both less racist than I expected and also somehow more racist than I expected at the same time. I guess it's
the equivalent of like your grandmother saying, "I love your Negro girlfriend. She speaks so well." Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
well, the things that they were racist about, I would like the whole like miscegenation conversation that's a good name for an album, miscegenation conversation.
Sounds like a metal band.
Write that one down. That's a Crime School song if I ever heard one. Check out Crime School, everybody.
Crime School.
But it's just wild. The whole fucking movie is fucking wild. Like, the whole time I'm watching this, right? Like, I know there used to be a podcast that I used to listen to a million years ago called How Did This Get Made? But that's all I was thinking of as I'm watching the movie. Not the podcast, but how did someone A, write this, B, get funding for it? You know, this had to go through several steps.
The pitch, it's like, hey, have you guys read Black Like Me? Yeah. What if we made it a comedy?
As we were watching it, I was just like, somebody at some point must have looked at someone else and said, like, there had to be a moment.
And there's like, you know, prominent Black actors in this movie. Like, James Earl Jones is like a classically trained, like,
the fact that they got James Earl Jones in this film,
and he's playing it straight as shit in this movie too. Like, he is
Zalazansky.
Bananas.
Yeah, it's fucking weird.
Mr. Wazansky.
And I mean, we'll also like, I we have so much to talk about with this movie, but the fact that like everybody, like, it's like it's as ridiculous as like Superman's glasses disguise, right? Because they're all like, they're shocked that he's not Black, but he doesn't look Black at all. Like, he does not look remotely Black.
But I kept talking to Sean the entire time about it because we watched together. Why did the self-tanning pills change his hair?
Thank you. They never touched on that.
He got that done as a separate process.
Yeah, they never addressed why
didn't do
hair,
the right. Like,
his hair is different. Like, I don't know.
Well, also, and we'll talk about it again. Well, I want to talk about it now. The efficacy and like the duration of that pill. Like, does he have to take it every hour? Like, is it every day? Because
more often a day.
It should be like the substance kind of rules where like he's gotta like take it or he starts like turning white. Like, I wanted him making out with Radon Chong and then like turning white.
Oh, that would be something.
This movie did have like, I mean, it had a couple of really solid dick jokes that always land with me. Right, also, apparently there's somebody in this movie, I'm not sure who it was, but like I saw the credits and they're like Ron Reagan. I'm like, that's a weird name. Turns out that Ron Reagan is legitimately Ronald Reagan's son.
Yeah. Rapping Ronnie Reagan.
Unbelievable.
He did say Will a lot.
Will.
What was that? What is that from? Futurama? No,
Simpsons.
Is that the Simpsons?
My Rapid Ronnie Reagan tape.
All right. Anyway, let's. We'll get into Soul Man. It is an embarrassment.
I'm glad we watched it.
I am. Finally, out of like all the like legendary like bad movies, this is always like up on the list. And yet again, it's not nearly as bad as some of the other movies we watched, but its conception is arguably worse. Like I
need to know what that story was.
I can't think of a more, I don't know,
wrong-headed movie.
Right. Like, can you think of another movie that's like just out of the box? Like, why did you
this?
Oh, we lost you there, Sean.
It's so racist we lost Sean.
Yeah, Sean.
Movie Sean is what people say Tropic Thunder is.
Yeah, but I don't take any of that shit seriously. I mean, I don't think, like, I don't know. People that got upset about the Tropic Thunder thing, I will say, like, that was like a weird, like, Zoomer TikTok thing where people got upset, but then it was mostly equaled, followed by it's a joke. Like, the point of Tropic Thunder is that it's tasteless and stupid. Like, that was the joke. It's no different than, you know, and I get kind of upset with the Always Sunny people sometimes because they've, like, I love them to death, but as they've gotten older, they, like, they've gone too woke. But, like, they even talk about, like, when they did the blackface on It's Always Sunny, like, the joke isn't the blackface. The joke is the fact that Mac and Dennis don't think there's anything wrong with it, and it's
right.
Terrible.
Or, oh, like, no, it's that they don't. It's that they both see the wrong thing wrong with it. One of them's
right,
like,
exactly.
You know, you have to do the voice. And the other one's
right,
like,
right. Yeah, like, you can't do the voice. Yeah, it's or like when D'Angelo does her horrible, like, racist characters, like, even Charlie's like, that's insanely racist. Like, I don't know. It's one of those things where, like, people get, I don't mean to sound like a fucking Joe Rogan boomer over here, but people get upset by the fact that there is offensive humor, but they don't look at what it's trying to do. Like, it's right. Not, it's not relishing in, like, it's not like, hey, isn't D'Angelo's
it's kind of the inverse. Hilarious.
Like, she's an idiot. Like,
it's kind of the inverse of that 310 to Yuma joke where it's like, oh, they said we can't say that word anymore when he's talking about, like, executing right. Black people. It wasn't right. Like the execution that was the problem. It was right, the right. Language.
The word. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good movie. Movie I've warmed up on over the years. All right. What did y'all watch this week? Sean.
Strap in. Slur. I almost said it. I'm sorry. I watched more movies while I was on vacation with Nate and Goggs than I have on my own in like 10 years. Nice. So, but I'll try and keep it brief because I think we've talked about most of them.
That's fine.
Let me check ones that Goggs didn't also watch.
Alec refused to take part in this.
Oh, he just hates me. He left the state so he didn't have to see me, and then he doesn't want to be on the show when I get back. So Nate and I watched Bring Her Back.
Oh, I loved it.
I really liked it. There's a scene in it that will stick with me forever, and I don't know if I'll ever be able to deal with it. It's the spoilers? Well, light spoilers. It's a scene where he gives the kid the piece of melon.
Yeah, that's not like not a terrible spoiler if you don't know the context of it.
Sure. It is horrifying. Like the noise, the and then
did you see Talk to Me? Have you seen that?
No. We were talking about that.
I really liked Talk to Me.
You need to watch that. I think Bring Her Back is better than Talk to Me, but Talk to Me is really good also.
There's also a part where the subtitles came in super clutch because they're like a half a beat early and it said teeth cracking.
Oh,
and I was like, oh, sweet. So I haven't had to look away in a movie. I had to do it twice in this.
Yeah.
Shit, I wish Nate was on here. The woman that plays the foster mother.
She's so good.
She's in some like kids movie. She's famous for something else, and I can't remember. Paddington or something. She's like mom in Paddington. Yeah, she's excellent. Everybody, so there's an actress. I don't remember how much of this you talked about. The lead young actress is blind for real.
Yeah.
She's great in the movie, and it makes you wonder how many times she had to walk through the sets, like how they blocked it.
Right.
because she's like moving through the space like incredibly well. Although there is a very kind of funny part where, not funny, but like realistic, where she's running away, and because she doesn't know her surroundings that well, she just smashes straight into a pole.
Yeah.
My only kind of like bitch with the movie, and it's not really that big, is that the mechanics of what's going on are not really explained particularly well. Like
they're super vague, but
yeah,
for me, I like that, because you know how I hate when they over-explain things. I thought it was kind of refreshing that you basically knew like nothing about how it happened, how she came across those tapes, like all that shit.
But the fact that they show the tapes, I guess they have to, like, it feels like they kind of like put a toe into it and then didn't.
Yeah.
I don't know, because there is a part where she's like, I met this angel, and I'm like, wait, are there actual angels in play? Like, I don't know, she's crazy, so it doesn't matter that much. Also, working in the foster care system, it's very realistic.
Oh, Jesus.
What
did you think of I thought that the like sections of found footage, I thought that shit looked really good.
It was awesome. Cool to think for ordering videotapes.
Two fucking YouTubers made that movie.
That's crazy.
Comedians. Yeah, they're like comic YouTubers, Australian, I believe. But you got to watch Talk to Me. I think you'll really like it.
I want to see it.
Lo-fi Australian horror is a good genre.
Or Bring Her Back.
Bring Her Back.
I'm sorry. I want to see Bring Her Back.
Bring Her Back's
really good. YouTube, so. And then the other thing Nate and I watched, because the rest of my stuff's tabled. We went to the movies and saw, though it's on the Plex, we saw Ballerina. A John Wick story. It's a lot of fun. It's I didn't see John Wick 4. I've seen all of them in the theater, but 4.
Yeah.
I know everybody's big bitch with John Wick 3 is like how weird it is and like how it gets into the lore and it's kind of all over the place. Like, this movie kind of does away with all of that. Like, and it's just, it's kind of the movie if you just want a John Wick type movie. It's directed by Len Wiseman, which I found shocking because it's like a surprisingly competent movie.
I didn't know
that. He directed those Underworld flicks.
Yeah.
This is the most grenades I've ever seen in a movie.
Hell yeah.
Like, it's very grenade heavy.
Spamming L2.
Spamming grenades. There's a flamethrower fight, like an extended flamethrower fight. What's her name?
Anna de Armas. You're not selling me on this.
Oh, it's so much fun. Anna de Armas like basically kills an entire town. Like, she goes to a whole town of assassins, kinda.
Oh, like an Assassinburg.
Basically, but it's like a fucking like Scandinavian Hamlet. She acquits herself very well. Keanu Reeves has a much bigger part in it. It's not huge.
Wait, where does this take place in the timeline,
though? I don't know. Like, I think it's between 2 and 3.
Okay.
Because he comes in and she burns burns the tattoo off of his back, Angelica Houston, who, by the way, Nate brought it up, and like, I feel bad, but he's right, is like, women will never allow to just get old again and look normal, because she looks fucking bizarre. And her accent's not the best. But it's cool to see Ian McShane, of course. Gabriel Byrne's the villain in this. I haven't seen him in a million years, so that was a lot of fun to see him.
I know he was still alive.
Yeah, me either. RIP Lance Reddick, he's in it.
The last time I've seen Gabriel Byrne was in fucking Hereditary. Because remember, he's the dad in Hereditary. That movie's like 10 years old.
If Lance Reddick's in this, they must have filmed this a while ago, right?
Yeah. I don't know if this was part of their TV show. Because remember, they're going to make a TV show about the Continental.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot of fun. Like, I enjoyed it thoroughly. Mine and his, I guess, the big bitch is the plot is unnecessary.
Yeah.
Like, they try and get into some plot and give it some like stakes and revenge, and it's like, I don't really need most of this, and the shit that isn't doesn't make a lot of sense. But it's cool to see Keanu Reeves in the movie for the, I don't know, he's probably got like 15 minutes, 20 minutes of screen time, which is more than I expected.
My one complaint, and you already know what it's going to be, I wish they didn't show him in the fucking trailer.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have been nice to have been surprised that he was in the movie. But the movie, they were too They're too fucking scared to market the movie without him in it. And it's like, come on, man. Like, but that's also the times we live in. Like, I still bitch about Civil War, the fact they showed Spider-Man in the fucking trailers. Like, how cool would Civil War been if Spider-Man just fucking showed up? You'd be like, oh my God, that's fucking amazing. But God, we can't have nothing anymore. Everything's got to be fucking spoiled. And I don't know. That's just a bitch on modern movies. But
I think Ana de Armas really like does a good job. I mean, for being someone who's not like physically imposing at all. She does, spoilers, I guess, mild spoilers. She does fight Wick briefly in the movie. Okay. And like, they don't. Well, it's mild spoiler, but it's a John Wick movie. Who cares? Like, he's still John Wick. You know what I mean? She's not like, they could have very easily like given her like, you know, a couple heat spots, and it's not like that. She, like, it is very clear that there are levels.
She didn't get her shit in.
Also, they hired Amy Lee from Evanescence to do like the title track that plays in the
credits. No way.
Fight like a girl. Like, it's so bad. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But, and I watched the first like three episodes of the last season of The Bear. I don't really care. I'm just kind of running out the clock on it.
Yeah.
Like, I like a family drama, but I hate fancy restaurant shit. And that, like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. But everything else I watch with Gogs. So, TJ.
I watched two things.
Two things?
I watched it's a Shudder exclusive. It's not a Shudder original. It's called Four Best Wishes, or I think I got the title wrong. Hold on. Anyway, I think it's called Four Best Wishes. It's a Japanese movie. It's a movie I really liked. It looks great. I can't remember now. It's something Best Wishes. Hold on. It's going to kill me now. But it's a Japanese movie. It's very atmospheric, and basically Best Wishes to All. I was way off. That's the title. In Japan, it's called Best Regards to All. I don't know why they changed the title, but either way, the movie is about this really odd family and this girl who's like a nurse. The main character is this girl who's like she's practicing to be like a doctor. She goes to visit her family, and her family's off. There's just something kind of off about her family, this little town that she grew up in. And then, I guess it's a mild spoiler, but it's kind of the entire crux of the movie. There's like something in her grandparents' attic, and they won't explain what it is. And you come to find out that her family believes that the only way your family can be happy if someone else is suffering. So there's literally this guy that's like eyes are sewn shut and his mouth is sewn shut, and he's just like rotting in their attic. He's still alive. But the concept is they believe that the only way you can have true happiness if someone is suffering. And the movie is clearly a metaphor on like capitalism, which I love. Also, there's a lot of, like,
you love the metaphor, not capitalism, just to be clear.
I hate capitalism. But no, the only problem that I had with this movie, and it's not the movie's fault, but there's a lot of commentary on Japanese society that I didn't pick up on until after I read about it. Like, because there's a very low birth rate going on in Japan currently right now. And there's this, I guess there's these like tax breaks that the elderly get that younger people don't. And there's this big like cultural divide that's going on in Japan right now. And the movie, I will say that I like the movie because it's very weird. It's very surreal at times, but almost to me, and again, I probably wouldn't have this opinion if I lived in Japan and got the references like right off the bat. I feel like the movie leans into the metaphor too much, like to a point where I had a hard time sometimes following what's going on. But overall, I really liked it. It's a weird-ass premise. The acting's really good. Parts of it are, like, insanely creepy. But it never goes, like, full, like, disgusting and gory. It just keeps getting, like, deeper and deeper into this nightmare that this girl is in. Because ostensibly, she's, like, a fish out of water. And everyone else is, like, fine with all this shit that's going on. But she's, like, learning about it. And then just stuff gets progressively weirder and weirder and weirder through the whole movie. I really liked it. I thought it was really interesting. again, some of the cultural stuff like went over my head, and when I read about it, I was like, oh, I get what that was for, and I get this and I get that. It's definitely worth checking out. It's one of the better Shudder things I've seen in a long time. I highly recommend it. I really enjoyed it. I also watched a movie I haven't watched since I was fucking 18. I watched The Doom Generation, a movie that I love, what I affectionately refer to as artcore trash. Like, this movie is very artsy, but in like a very trashy, not like pretentious, but it's like, it's very art house, and it's very like, the plot kind of doesn't matter. It's more about the environments and how the characters react, and the plot is basically non-existent. Like,
when you say artcore trash, is that like Harmony Korine type movies?
Yeah, 1000% is, that's exactly what I mean. Like all like modern Harmony Korine, specifically like the Beach Bum, Spring Breakers, that kind of thing, where it's like, it's artsy, but it's like also like aesthetically pleasing, but it's not like, it's not really meditating on anything that's like too deep. Like, this movie is basically about like sexuality in America. Like, that's kind of what the whole plot is about, and how fucking like the main characters are, I forget all of their names, but their last names are Red, White, and Blue. And It's they're in this weird kind of thruple, and the two, the boyfriend and the girlfriend, the girlfriend is Rose McGowan, who, dear Lord, like, this is like peak McGowan
lady,
especially back then. Holy shit. She awoken something me when I saw this the first time, and she's pretty much naked the entire movie, which is wonderful. But it's a boyfriend and a girlfriend, and they're literally in this like industrial club that you could only see in a movie. We've joked about these kind of clubs, like in The Crow and, you know, that kind of thing. But they're literally in a club that says hell, and then they ascend from hell, and they go and they get involved with this third guy who is like this, like, he's just this wild card. He's like this kind of, he's this like bisexual dynamo, and he's like trouble. And the movie's just one weird vignette after another. And then in between all the vignettes, they're like constantly fucking. The guy that I'm talking to, the bisexual guy, him and the boyfriend have this like this chemistry where it is very sexual. Like, it's not even like, it's not even subtle about it. Eventually they all form into a couple and they're all having sex. But then literally right before the two men are about to have sex, these fucking jocks that are harassing the bisexual guy in a previous scene, they show up to literally like castrate the one guy, but as they're playing the fucking Stars and Stripes, and they're all like, they all have like swastikas painted on them. And they're like, again, they have like, I think he assaults Rose McGowan with a statue of Mary. Like, it's all just very like edgy 90s, like iconography kind of stuff, but I love it. And the movie's great, and it's funny, and it's weird, and it's, again, it's very like visually interesting. Like,
guy's in nothing but artcore trash. He's in this, he's in Nowhere, he's in Donnie Darko, he's in SLC Punk, he's in May, he's in Go.
You're talking about the I can't remember his name, but he very much reminds me of like a Keanu Reeves, and in this movie he just plays like this kind of like stoner guy. Like, he's just like, whoa, you know, that guy. He's in all the, I can't, if you got the IMDb up, I can't think of the guy that made Doom Patrol.
James, but Duvall is the guy's name.
Not Doom Patrol, Doom Generation. No, the director of Doom Generation.
Greg Araki.
All his movies are pretty great, and they're all pretty much like this. That actor is in all the Greg Araki movies. But the movie looks amazing, and it was shot on like, I think it was made for like $800,000, but like, the movie has all these like weird, every time they go to a hotel, it's like this weird theme, and it looks amazing. Like, he, I don't know how he shot this movie so cheap. But all the interiors look great. There's just, every scene is fucking insane. Like, it's a movie you can't take your eyes off of. Again, the plot is just kind of nonsense. Like, literally they just get into weird situation after weird situation. And then like every time Rose McGowan interacts with a new guy, like, they think that she's some woman that has scorned them in their lives. And that's, I think that's sort of a critique on like how men like you know, basically objectify women. It's what I read into it. And they kind of see all women as the same person. But it's great. I really enjoyed it. It's short. It's like a hundred. It's like an hour and 20 minutes long. It's like, or no, I'm sorry. It's 90 minutes long. I did it again. I do it all the time. It's great. It's a great movie. It's a lot of fun. It is a vanguard of queer cinema, as people like to call it. And hilariously, in the opening credits, it says a it literally before the title card, it says a heterosexual film, which I find hilarious because it is far from it. But it's very good, and I highly recommend it if you want to watch some weird artsy stuff that's like kind of like artsy in the most like adolescent way possible. If you want to see a lot of fun cameos, because like the members of Skinny Puppy are in this movie. Heidi Fleiss is in this movie.
Holy shit.
Perry the Hollywood Farrell.
Madam Heidi Fleiss?
Yeah, Perry Farrell is in the movie. All for like 5 seconds. But like the soundtrack's really good. It's a cool-ass movie. I think Sean has talked about this a lot, but there's just movies that are just cool. And this movie is just cool. And Rose McGowan's great. She has like this kind of like stilted kind of Valley Girl talk. And she's got a lot of great like one-liners. Like they go to this drive-thru. And the guy's like, you know, she's like, he's like, I forget the name, but he's like, Angel, it's you. And she's like, wake up and smell the cappuccino, geek. I'm not who you think I am, or something like that. But it's like, it's awesome. I love it. Again, Doom Generation, wonderful film. It was as much fun now as when I was 18 and watched it. Big fan. And that's all I watched. I also watched Mulholland Drive, but, you know. I've already talked about that movie.
Oh, with M. Bison?
Yes, with M. Bison.
That cast is fucking, in, like, it's bonkers.
It keeps getting progressively more and more insane.
But, anyway. So, yeah. Gogs.
I don't think I watched anything that Sean also didn't watch. So, we can just run down.
Big up.
Oh, wait, no, I watched one. I take it back. I watched one thing that Sean didn't watch. I watched this really kind of shitty horror movie. I've seen it before, so I forgot that I'd seen it before. You guys ever seen The Ruins?
I remember it coming out. I don't think I ever saw it.
It's a story about a bunch of just like insufferable college kids that are down like in Mexico, and they go to explore some ruins, and those ruins are covered.
The title.
Yep, the ruins are covered with they are carnivorous plants that it's covered with pee and poop. and the plants proceed to eat the shit out of these kids.
That sounds stupid.
It is. It is.
They're plants. Just fucking. Get out of here.
Well, so here's the deal, right? They go onto this like Aztec fucking what's it, right? And in doing so, it triggers all the locals to be like, oh shit, well, once you're contaminated, you gotta stay there forever. Mm-hmm. So they're basically held basically hostage on this temple. Until they are all, because one of them tries to escape, they just get blasted in the face with a revolver. And then if you touch the plants, then you're doomed to die there. And so that's what they do. They all die, and it's pretty wild. So
I think I have another Simpsons reference. There's I think it's when they go to Africa and Homer gets eaten by like a man-eating flower and he just walks out of it. And Homer's like, yeah, it's a flower.
Yeah, it's just, it is not like I say. It's not a high watermark for cinema, but it's on Shudder.
That so book, there's that. That book that movie is based on is always highly recommended on like horror talk. But
is the book like does it have the same name or is it the same premise?
I believe it has the same name. It's called The Ruins.
Yeah, but I mean, like, is it about a bunch of tourist trapped by remote terrorized by carnivorous plants? Son of a bitch.
Yeah, I've never read it. It's just people always say that's a great book.
I mean, it's got some good gore to it. It's got its moments, but it's not great. And the cast is
I feel like eating a plant-eating people is a better thing that could probably be told in a book than in a movie. It's a hard thing to sell.
Yeah, I mean, there were some cool, like, there's some cool moments, like, when the plant, like, they wake up and, like, the plant's vines have, like, gotten onto them and, like, into them. Like, it's, like, gone into a wound. This one girl has to, like, cut him out of herself because she's, like, having a moment. Yeah,
that is kind of cool.
Visually, it's gross. So I watched that. So here's all the stuff that Sean and I watched together, and it's mostly repeats. So Sean, you can jump in whenever you feel like you have anything you want to say. Yeah. Good times.
Yeah.
We watched with my kids, we watched Nacho Libre, which is a movie I have not seen in a long time. Yeah. And I liked it a lot more than I remembered.
I thought you liked it initially. I
liked it before, but I like it a lot more now. Like it's like, I don't know, the Jared Hess humor is a lot stronger with me.
Yeah, it's crazy that he was in line to do Captain America before they gave it to Joe Johnson or whatever that guy's name is. Was
he really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. I feel like Jack Black would not do that movie right now.
Probably not, no.
Also, probably based on a true story, weirdly.
Really? I did not realize that.
Yeah. Based on Fray Tormenta, a real priest who wrestled so to get money for his orphanage.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's charming. But yeah, Jack Black doing an Antonio Banderas for 2 hours is kind of wild. We also watched with my son, with Vance, we got to watch I finally showed him Big Trouble in Little China.
Hell yeah.
So that was special. I always enjoy that movie.
Did he like it?
He loved it. Yeah.
No, he loved it. Yeah. Yeah, we even let him say fuck a bunch of times.
We did.
Hollow?
Oh, hollow. Fuck it. Fuck it. He really loved that part.
It's so funny with Goggs' son because he's starting to do like Simpsons references.
Yeah,
like he did his Arnie Ziff impression. Like, oh, don't worry about my busy hands. And the impression was good, but I asked Cox, I'm like, does he get that joke? And he goes, not one bit.
There's no way. Yeah,
nope. But you know, once again, just good times. Happy I can share that with him. We watched. I forgot. There was one night I woke up with a headache, so I had to like take some medicine and wait it out. And in waiting it out, I watched Predator again. And I feel like the version of Predator I watched on Hulu is got more to it. Like there was like parts of it that I'm like, I don't recall this. Like the fight scene between Arnold and the Predator at the end seemed like it was more fleshed out. There seemed like there was more going on. I don't know if there's like an extended cut or what, but like I've seen Predator a lot. There's stuff I was like, oh,
I've seen
like,
Predator a bunch.
Yeah. But you know, shout out to Predator, great movie. Shane Black, good times. Like the plot of Predator is still like kind of loosey goose and weird, but you know, figuring out all the intrigue and who's being lied to and you know why they're there in this nondescript country and why it can't get over the border with the invasion or whatever is happening. Ton of fun. Love me some Predator. Oh wait, actually, I do this reflection on Predator, which is you know,
why does that sound? Come, like, it sounds like your TED talk, like Goggs's reflections on Predator.
Why? So when in the end of the movie, when when the Predator takes off the mask, right?
Mm-hmm.
His vision is dick, right? Like his vision is like trash. It's like bright red. You can barely distinguish anything. And I'm like, how did this become a spacefaring species when they can't see shit without the technology? Like, how do they get the technology to see shit so they could actually get across the cosmos? But those are just my reflections on Predator.
Maybe their planet has a different light spectrum.
That would really have to be the only possible answer, right? Like it's silly, but whatever. It's not going to detract from my love of Predator. And then Sean and I also watched, after we went to Hershey Park, we watched the documentary Class Action Park about Action Park in New Jersey, which I've seen, I think, two other times. It was Sean's first viewing, so I'll let Sean talk about his thoughts on that movie.
Yeah, it's a love letter to deregulation. It's like, you know, a bunch of people died and got hurt, but not everybody died, so we should just not regulate things.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not going to lie, the rides did seem awesome.
Yeah, but several people died.
Yeah, but it's like, TJ, have you seen it?
No.
Like, it opens with this water slide, and they're like, what if we just make a water slide that has a loop-de-loop in it, which is something no one has ever done because it's, like, not physically feasible?
Yeah, it's not viable to make this happen.
Firing these, like, Camp Crystal Lake employees down this thing, and they kept hitting the top and falling, and they're paying them, like, $5 or something to go through it. And then the next set of people came out and they're all cut and they couldn't figure out why. But what it was people's teeth were getting stuck in the tube from smashing their faces into it so hard.
Yeah, they're getting shredded up by people's embedded teeth.
Jesus.
They had these go-karts that I found out later how they beat the governors. They stuck a tennis ball in the speed governor. So these go-karts all went 65 miles an hour, but it was right next to their Oktoberfest tent. So everybody was getting shit hammered, and the park also had an interstate running through the middle of it, so people were getting drunk and taking the go-karts on the interstate.
it was a park that was so insane Donald Trump was invited to be an investor, and he said no, this is too chaotic.
They just had a cliff jumping, that was a ride where you just jumped off a cliff into the water, but the water is so cold people went into shock.
I gotta watch this movie.
It's on HBO. It's great.
Yeah. Two people died in the wave pool because the wave pool was so fucking egregious.
Didn't Johnny Knoxville make some sort of movie about this park?
I think
Wasn't it summer?
I think it was called Action Park or so. I remember it was like, I think it was like Bad Grandpa, where it was like half movie but half Jackass stunts. I could be missing.
Did it have Social Network in it? Lex Luthor?
No, you're thinking of a different movie. That movie is.
Are you thinking about Adventureland?
Yeah, that's a different.
That movie's not bad,
but it came out. I know why you got it confused with it, because they came out like right at the same time. It was one of those weird, like, nobody remembers either movie because they both like kind of reminded you of the same thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That shit's a lot of fun. We also watched Sinners.
Oh, I forgot we watched Sinners. Yeah, we watched a lot of movies. Oh, wait, real quick, Glass Action Park. My wife's cousin went to Action Park when he was a young man, like in like his teens, because they were vacationing up there. And he remembers, he said the loop-de-loop slide was closed. He remembers the cliff jumping thing. And he remembers that cannonball slide. He's like, you just go into this tube. And at the end of it, you're launched into just midair 15 feet in the air. And then you just splash into this pool. So he can confirm.
So the Johnny Knoxville movie was called Action Point, and it's exactly what I thought. It's like, it's kind of loosely based on Action Park, and it's like half a, like I said, it's like half a movie, half like Jackass stunts.
They had a Colorado Rapids ride for which they had underwater fans, but one of the fans got a short in it, so somebody fell off of the canoe and got electrocuted to death.
Jesus Christ.
I think 6 or 8 people died in this park. Like, and they just, someone died year one. Like, someone
and they,
died.
They just soldiered on. Like, someone died. And they're like,
they were just known for like 16 years.
That's amazing.
Someone died year one, 16 years. Like, just, they would let you sue. They basically were like, sue us and we just won't. We'll drag you through court. We'll drag you to whatever. And then if you win, we just won't pay you. Until you send the marshals.
The guy that owned the park invented a fake liability insurance company to say that he had insurance that he owned.
It's an excellent documentary. It is batshit insane.
And speaking of movies with cautionary tales about miscegenation, we did watch Sinners.
That's also true.
I liked it. My expectations were very low because of TJ and a couple other people that I like who saw it.
I don't think the allegory is subtle at all. So the people are like, oh, it's a subtle allegory. When
it is
the
not.
White no. Irish character says, we want to take your music and your stories. And again, yeah. I think beware of white allies is a good message because they do co-opt everything. But like the movie's like wildly uneven, and like the scenario and character building work really well. And then they just kind of rush through the third act very quickly. And it's just like, I don't know. Like,
yeah, I agree.
I can't put my finger on exactly how to repair that, but I feel like he could have. I don't know if there's just a lot of it that got cut because the movie's not super long.
I think spoilers for Sinners. Like I agree with everything Sean's saying. I think that there's like in the end, it should have been vampires or the clan is the vampires. That would work better.
Yeah, I still think, and I said this to you guys at dinner, but I still think like the end coda with like the landowners being the clan, like that all seemed very tacked on. And it's
I was talking to Nate about it, and he kind of made a good point where he's like, well, you can't really have the clan just be the vampires because then it's like, oh, they're just this goofy kind of villain. It's like you got to have like the kind of like, you know, spiritual evil and the like. I forget. He said it in a smart book way, but like kind of the last real thing, mundane evil. And then like kind of the like overall like societal evil or whatever he said. But I mean, it was kind of a good point.
But I liked it. I thought it was well shot, well directed. Michael B. Jordan's great in it. Spider-Gwen's great in it. Like actually everyone's really good in it. Like the bad guy who is Jimmy from 28 Weeks Later is good in it. Like it's beautiful and it's like fun, and I liked there's the coda and then there's the second coda, and I thought the second coda was actually really well done. I thought that made the story even better. So
I feel like the movie is still to this day way overhyped. I had somebody on my Facebook feed when it came on Max said the greatest movie of the last 10 years. I was like,
I mean, okay, that's right. It's not okay. Ryan Coogler's best movie.
That's no. Crazy.
Yeah. I was like, calm down. Like calm down.
I felt like kind of the same way about it. I felt as Ballerina. I was like, it's a lot of fun. It's a good movie. I mean, it obviously the subject matter is more serious, but like, it's not, it's just a good movie. Like it's a 7 or 8, like high 7, low 8 for me.
Yeah. I mean, again, like I think if I watched it a second time, I'd probably be a little less harsh than I was the first time. And I don't think I was overly harsh the first time. I was just disappointed in it. I was expecting more, you know?
Yeah. I mean, well, it was coming with so much like weight behind it and an unapologetically like ecstatic crowd trying to be like how great it is. I mean, it was probably, you could never live up to the hype that it received.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't mean to be cynical, but sometimes I think people just, I don't know. They get like, amped up about a movie.
People act. Now this isn't saying anything about the movie's quality, but people act like this movie about the way they acted about the Crash. Not the David Cronenberg crash, the other one.
Oh, the Oscar crash.
It's this great racism crash,
not the sexy crash.
Like it's this great treatise on stuff, and it's really kind of just surface level, like, which is fine.
Yeah, I'm fine with surface level. I mean, it's a horror movie. Like, I'm fine with.
I'm very lowbrow.
The thing I just kept hearing and like was, it's Sean touched on it earlier. People talking about the metaphor, and it's like, okay, but this isn't like The Mirror by Tarkovsky. This isn't like everything is very easy to pick up. Like maybe you haven't ever watched a movie that used metaphor and you're like shocked about it. I don't know what to tell you, but like the movie is not this like deep thing, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think the movie gets more criticism from me because of the overwhelming positive response to it. And it's just like, I don't know. It's a little much. I'm getting the same problem with 28 years later, to be perfectly honest, where people are like, well, this means this. And it's like, okay, yeah, I get that. I'm not an idiot. Like I saw somebody like freaking out about Sinners. They're like, well, the, the main character represents Robert Johnson. It's like, yeah, no shit. Like, what did you, like, did you figure, did you have to read about that to figure that out? Like, yeah, no, no kidding.
But do you like, think that, like,
read a book, like, Christ almighty.
Do you think that the center, like, do you think the center's hype is also partially, like, a, I don't know how any other way to say this, like, a ultra-lib woke fear of criticizing it for, like, the current state of things we're
maybe
in.
I mean, maybe there's a little bit of that, but I don't know. I think it's a good movie. I think it's a decent movie that is maybe slightly more advanced than like the Fast and the Furious, so people are thinking they're watching an art film. I don't know, but again, that's very cynical of me. I don't fucking know. I like the Doom Generation. Okay, that movie is basically porn, and I think that movie's great. So
shout out to porno.
Like, I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, there hasn't been like, there's not going to be Supreme Court cases about Sinners, but there were Supreme Court cases about porno. So what's done more for society?
It's a fair point.
Speaking of, I was waiting for Nate to do something. I've put on Hard Ticket to Hawaii for like 10 seconds.
Oh, hell yeah. That movie and rules.
Like, it's like, you know, the opening like titty scene, and like, it looks like, so I'm waiting for his wife to come in and wonder why I'm just straight up watching pornography on her couch.
Oh, that movie's so, you didn't finish it, did you? That movie's so fucking stupid. Oh, it's
no,
great.
What's it, wait, what's it called?
Hard Ticket to Hawaii. It's on the Plex. The guy's name's Andy. I was going to say Andy Sedaris, but that's the satirical writer that wrote that terrible movie that we watched on the show. But mm-hmm. he made all these like 90s like softcore porn movies, hey. But they have like really good production value somehow, and like he ends up like doing like really crazy, like everything blows up and it's like super over the top. It's very funny. I highly recommend it. Mm. At one point there's this giant snake that's like a MacGuffin in the movie, and then the snake just like shows up, and then the one of the male characters rides a motorcycle through the girl's apartment and shoots it with a bazooka, which is amazing.
That sounds insane.
Yeah, watch it. Don't watch it with your kids around. There's a lot of titty in it, but
I mean, they've seen titty.
I guess. I don't know how to respond to that. All right. Are we going to get into Soul Man? Before we get into the movie proper, can I just say that this has one of the worst renditions of the song Soul Man? Because
it's fucking terrible.
Lou Reed, the same thing.
And Lou Reed always sounds like he's doing karaoke, but somebody turned off the machine, because he's always like off a little bit. And like,
I mean, I kind of love Lou Reed, though. I'm not going to lie.
I don't like him when he collaborates with people. It always seems weird and off.
Especially Metallica.
Keep it Sam and Dave. Lulu? Like, it doesn't need.
Hell yeah!
Like Sam Dude, and that, Dave, great.
And they kept fucking playing it. They played it through the whole movie.
Is it because they wanted to have a black guy and a white guy
and a white? Oh yeah, just put that together. Holy shit! You're right.
Because it's awful. This is why white people should stay out of music. Like this is like the right. Like you took a beautiful song. Like I love
Soul Man is perfect. Yeah.
Like from the opening trumpet notes to the end, that song goes hard in the paint.
Great song. Also, but, like, it has a message. It's like,
but no, it's bad. So anyway, let's talk. Oh, I also watched A League of Their Own. It turns out I forgot. Liz and I watched that movie. Rules. There's no crying in baseball. Yeah. Okay. So a couple things we're going to get off of our chests real early in this movie. Our main character, Mark, played by C. Thomas Howell, is sort of he's like a Marty Sue. Like he doesn't really, like, even when he does wrong, he really does no wrong in this movie. And the movie opens.
I feel like he listens to like an unusual amount of blues music for a rich kid that's going to Harvard in 1986.
Yeah.
This is like a trope in like 80s movies, but like the convoluted way that you need to turn your alarm clock off was like a running gag. And like he's got like a ball that he hits this
speaker, he throws against like, his stereo, but right. So anyway, you're introduced, so there's a party, like a parties are party is happening in some sort of condo or apartment. These kids are of undetermined age because it's the '80s. They could have been 18. They could have been 30. Like nobody knows. Right. And party happens and everyone's excited. Oh no, sorry. No, that's not how it opens.
No. The movie opens with him
waking up
He's with a naked woman that he doesn't remember going to bed with.
Who he has to introduce himself to, right? Yeah. So, and his buddy comes in, and he just doesn't... He is so dismissive of this young lady, because him and his buddy need to figure out if they got into Harvard Law together. And turns out they did.
Making your main character a unlikable rich asshole is a choice... I don't understand.
He's an absolute twerp.
I just want this guy to fail. He's just a piece of shit. And it's like, he never really doesn't become a piece of shit through the entire movie.
Well, so at the end, I think they try and make it so he's not, because he decks those racists and he starts
at the very end. Yeah.
This is very similar to, I'm going to talk about a movie I love for half a second. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, right? If you watch that movie, which I do, and the plot of that movie, the MacGuffin of that movie is that Clark Griswold will not have the money to cover the check that he wrote to put an in-ground pool in for his family. Right. Like, that is the dramatic action of the film. It is so, like, just... vapid and just like pointless, and like there's no reason you should attach any emotional value to this, right? The same thing, like this guy's turn at the end is not really him becoming a good person, it's him digging out of the pit to becoming like a baseline human being. Like he is he's working for his tuition, and he's not a racist. Like he has now been leveled with everyone else.
Also, like not for nothing, at the resolution of this, I think I turned to you, I was like, they're gonna have to kill everybody who knows about this, because the minute this gets out, Harvard is done.
Let me tell y'all something before we get to the end of this movie, right? Monsters University had more stakes than this movie. At the end, of Monsters University, Sully and Mike Wazowski go through a door. They get caught cheating, and then they invent a new type of scream energy or whatever they do, and they make it back. But what's her name with the boobs who plays like a dragon? She's like, you guys fucked up, but you show promise, but we are still kicking you out of Monster College. Good luck. In this movie, spoiler alert, we get to the end where this guy has defrauded the federal government, the state of California, whatever it is, defrauded somebody.
Right, right.
And he is faked being a different race. And they're like, you know, we like your chutzpah, kid. We're not kicking you out of school. Like, what?
It's like the end of Undercover Brother. It's like, I like you, you're in. It's like, I didn't see that bitch at spy school.
Yeah. So anyway, we're going to Tarantino this. We're talking about the end, now we'll go back to the beginning. So dude wakes up, him and his buddy is not quite Bronson Pinchot, and he's not quite the guy from The Bear, but he looks like the two of them put together. And they're like, all right, well, we're going to take this, like, is it a polar bear or a paper mache reindeer? And we're going to load it into our Jeep, and we're going to drive to Boston because we're going to Harvard together. But before that can happen, his dad, this insufferable kid's dad, he goes to visit him at the pool when the dad's doing the Batman thing. And the mom is just like, that mom is like, if this was a modern movie, she would just be pilled up. The dad, who's in a Fila tracksuit, is like, listen, I want to do something special for you. And he's like, oh, you're going to buy me a Ferrari. He's like, no, you're going to pay for your own college. I've done enough for you.
Speaking of weird jokes in the 80s that they did all the time, like weird exercise. Like he's in this weird, I don't even understand
the Batman thing.
It's an inversion table. It's stretching your back out. Vinny had one also, for a minute.
He tells his wife to shut up every time she
Time. So then he's like, listen, I've been talking to Dr. Steve Brule or whatever the name of his psychiatrist is. And he's like, he says, I need to cut you off. And so then Mark goes to see this guy, and dude's like, dude, it's the dad from Alf, and he's like, I hate my kids and my family.
Who that was? I was like, that I know that guy. Yeah,
he's exactly. Like, and so like, he's like the worst therapist ever. Like, BetterHelp.com would not hire him. And he, this segment brought to you by BetterHelp. So he's like, you know what? You're a little shit. Your dad's doing the right thing. Go get fucked. And then he leaves, and like, this guy is like creating a cult because they're all wearing Fila track suits out in the waiting room. So then old boy's trying to figure out what the hell is he gonna do. So he's talking it over, and then this is like stepped on earlier. He, during the party to celebrate going to Harvard, two things happen. One, Julie Louis-Dreyfus's fine ass shows up with her dork boyfriend who's going to like Brown or something. And then the other thing that goes on is that guy from Fast Times at Ridgemont High got a scholarship to go do his PhD thesis on sunscreen or something. Yeah, and yeah. They just mentioned it as they're smoking weed under a kitchen table, right? So now they're trying to figure out, okay, we need a scholarship. We need something to figure out. They're looking through the Guinness World Records big book of scholarships, and they're like, okay, the most deserving kid in L.A., the most deserving black student in L.A. can get a free ride to Harvard or some such with a stipend and what have you. And they're like, well, I'm not black. I'm like, okay. So then this just happens. Like, this is like Oppenheimer, where they took the one part of the movie that you really wanted to understand, and it just, like, there's no bomb, right? Like, it's just like, yeah. All right, we're going to do before and after. So the bear is out running on the pier, and then the guy who looks just like his best friend runs up behind him, and the guy's like, who are you?
Yeah, and... If for you, those of you at home that don't want to sully your Google history looking this movie up, it's just him in, it's not even like, it's just brown makeup. Like, he looks exactly the same. They didn't change the structure of his face. Like,
his hair is different.
I told Gogs he looks like when they take a Ken doll and they make him black, but they don't change anything about his face.
Or on Rob Liefeld, when Rob Liefeld draws black women.
Oh, yeah. Also, they can't... I don't know if they, like, were mixing this every day that they shot it, but the makeup never matches, and sometimes it's in the same scene. He's ashy, then sometimes he looks like he's Pakistani, and then sometimes he's, like Al Jolson. Like, it is all over the fucking shop.
The color palette is wild. So, anyway... He runs up on his boy. His boy's like, hey, get away from me. He's like, hey, it's me. It's Mark, your best friend. I'm just darker now. And they're like, how'd you do that? He's like, I talked to What's-Its, and he gave me a bunch of experimental tanning pills, and I took too many of them, and now I'm black, and also my hair is curly.
Also, he's so afraid of black people that look exactly like his best friend and sound like him that he falls off of the Santa Monica Pier.
Yeah. So now it's time to move.
Yeah, that's another thing I was surprised by in this movie. And again, this points to how the movie is less racist than I expected. I thought he was going to be doing like a black scent the whole time.
No, he's literally
talking. Like, I'm kind of glad. I mean, it's already bad enough.
The only time that comes into play is when they're having that weird dinner party at Leslie Nielsen's house, but more about that later.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, he still sounds like a rich asshole. Like, his voice has that affect to it. So he doesn't seem like a kid that worked hard to get a scholarship. He just seems like a rich, like East Asian asshole. Like, I can't really place it, because he doesn't look like an African American. Like, he looks like bizarre.
Yeah, he definitely looks bizarre.
He looks goofy. So anyway, they head to Boston. They move into Leslie Nielsen's building. Leslie Nielsen's daughter is Jan Levinson Gould from The Office, and she's instantly smitten with the possibility of being able to bed a young African American man. Leslie Nielsen and his slumlord assistant are overtly racist. They're basically like, if it does anything wrong, kick him out. Like, I don't care if it's like loud music, and then do some bit where they break all the rules immediately. Like, they're smoking weed and they punch a hole in the wall and they're blasting.
They're like, no smoking, no loud music, no pets. So they do all that. And then this is the funniest part of the movie to me. He just goes, yo, I think we should get an ocelot.
I think we should get an ocelot. Sent me. I was like, okay. So now, So now it's day one of college. And oh, by the way, at Harvard Law, you only take one class by one professor at right. all times.
Yeah.
So Mark shows up to Darth Vader's law class, and he sits next to Radon Chong, and he's trying to be cool, and it's not working out, and you get some, and like Sean said earlier, James Earl Jones is playing this. This is, once again, this is Michael Caine in The Muppets Christmas Carol. He is playing this impossibly straight. Right.
Oh, yeah.
So the movie moves on, as movies tend to do. And at some point, like sort of out of left field, Mark bangs Jan Levinson Gould, and then there's some racism there. He's kind of working. There's these two guys that he keeps running into that keep making racist jokes, and they look at him and he's like, "It's no big deal." And they're like, "Okay, thank God," because they get scared, and they're like, "Oh, never mind, we gotta pass." There's a scene, there's a very long scene where they play a game of pickup basketball, and it's basically like that scene, It's Always Sunny, because when Mark shows up, they're like, "Oh, you got one, we get one too," and they can let them guard each other, and then he is just
awful
rash at basketball.
Yeah.
So then, movie persists. He's getting also, better at studying.
Also, codes it kind of weird that like he's only bad at basketball because he's not actually black. Like, if he was black, he would automatically be good at basketball.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I was like, that's kind of weird in general. Like, he's not athletic at all. Like, but if he was black, look out. Like,
yeah. So eventually he's sort of like half courting Radon. Oh, he wants to like make an impression with Radon Chong. So he finds out about like the militant black lawyer groups.
All right, this is the joke that got me.
They're just a black student group, and his buddy Styles or whatever is like, "Yo, I heard they're kind of militant."
Yeah.
And he's dressed up like Huey. I always said the wrong one.
Huey Lewis.
Huey Newton.
And he shows up and makes an ass of himself. But it's hilarious. You know, other hijinks ensue. He finally, he gets invited to dinner at Leslie Nielsen's house. And
this
like,
shit there's these, is out of pocket.
Like the mom, like, I forget, like, so the mom has like sex fantasies about him. The dad has like pimp fantasies about him. Son, what is the son's? I forget what the son's vision is.
I don't remember, but the dad's vision of him, first of all, he's wearing like a Spirit Halloween pimp costume.
Yeah.
Which they must have had to make, because that wasn't a popular costume back in the day.
He looked like WWE's godfather. Like
he does. He's eating like a whole ass like cartoon slice of watermelon in his dream.
Yeah,
the daughter is pregnant. He says, "Go get my hypodermic needle for my heroin, you fat white slut." When he said that, I howled. I laughed so hard.
So I've never seen this movie, but I've seen that clip from this movie. So yeah. I thought the whole movie was going to be like that. So it wasn't. And again, like to go back to our point where this movie is like trying to be progressive. The racist is the one who envisions him that way. You know what I mean? Leslie Nielsen is super racist. So again, like they're trying to be progressive in the most backwards, awful way possible.
But fat white slut is still funny when he's talking to his pregnant girlfriend.
What did, at some point an N-word does get dropped in this movie because I was waiting for it. And then it eventually shows up. But I forget at what point that happens.
There was.
Yeah, there was one.
Was it when they were in the jail cell with all the Boston townies?
That's right.
Why did he get arrested again? Oh, he got pulled over.
DWB.
He got pulled over.
To be fair, a black dude with a Jerry curl driving a Jeep YJ in 1986 wearing a cable knit sweater is an odd sight in Boston.
Yeah, and he didn't want to hand over his license because his license had a picture of a white guy on it, right? So then that's when the whatever the Celtics crazies are called, they beat him up.
They couldn't afford licensing from the Celtics or from, I guess, the Red Sox or the Patriots, so they're just wearing sports attire.
Could Ford or those organizations had the good sense to not say yes?
I mean, I don't know. One or the other.
So yeah, anyway, I feel
like the Red Sox would not be opposed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So he's experiencing what it's like to be black. Like he really knows now. And he finds out that Radon Chong is working to afford her education, and oh, she was married before and got divorced, or her husband died. I forget which one it was.
She's engaged in the hardest of Scrabbles.
Yeah. So, and then you find out that she's from LA, or San Diego rather.
And from San Diego, yeah.
And that he took her scholarship, because that was one of the other things. It was like, no one else applied. I'm not taking this from a needy person. Like, this is, you know, this is money that would be wasted otherwise. So that was his kind of like mental justification. So now, as we enter the third act of this movie, things start becoming unglued. You have Jan Levinson Gould just trying to get her rocks off again by lounging around in his apartment. He's trying to deal with that when his parents suddenly show up and he puts on a shiesty mask and tries to scurry them off to the kitchen and make coffee and explain whatever. Then Radon Chong shows up and she doesn't want to see the fact that there's this naked broad in her man's bedroom. So he's like, it becomes Keystone Cops, like Benny Hill-esque. Yeah. He's running around. At some point, his parents see him with his mask off. And I would like to think, if I can't tan, but I would like to think that if I were to be able to be tan and then I would see my parents and talk to them in my normal human voice, that they would go, hey, what the hell? This is clearly my son. It doesn't happen in this case.
His disguise is so good. They can't process it.
But then again, it's also, I say that, and then there's time whenever I call my parents and I call my dad and he picks up the phone and I go, Dad, he says, Andrew, questioningly, because who else is saying this to him?
My father has my name in his phone with my first and last name. He doesn't know anybody else named Sean. And also the way my first name is spelled is very unusual.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah. And that, you're right. I'm calling his cell phone. It's got that's caller ID.
That rules. I love that.
So anyway, he's running around. His parents are, they were going to, the dad is like, he turned, he's like, I'm going to start paying for your school again. I made a mistake. I need my money to stab this Negro that broke into your house.
3 years of Harvard Law School is the princely sum of $50,000, which is like a semester of a state college right now.
I it's the first thing I thought when he like said that his numbers. I was like, oh, what a time to be alive.
Also, we breeze past this, but Julia Louis-Dreyfus is in this movie with some other dude who vaguely looks like C. Thomas
Howell.
Just
like C. Thomas Howell.
And he also wants a scholarship.
I think that's Ron Reagan. Yeah.
So when they meet, for whatever reason, they're the only ones who may realize who he is. So he immediately affects a Stevie Wonder impression for some reason.
Yeah, a deaf Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
And they don't recognize him and they're screaming at him. And then out of nowhere, old boy Eagle Eyes, like the name on the scholarship winning plaque as Mark. And like he's getting ready to turn him in. But like, so, and this is where things kind of unravel. There's a scene a la Animal House where there's like a tribunal, but I don't think it's to put Mark on trial. I think it's to swear him in because as being like part of the justice committee, because Darth Vader.
I was really confused by the trial scene. Like, I don't know. But I thought I missed part of the movie, to be
perfectly
honest.
It feels like they cut like a 2-minute expository scene out of it because his boy just rolls in like Ben Affleck in Good Will Hunting. Yeah. Like, I am his lawyer. And everybody just goes along with it.
And his boy is also in law classes, but he's never in his class. But then, like, so there's a scene earlier where.
Oh, he's in the white classes, guys.
I'm in real court every day, and if you're not there for the thing that it is noticed for, they do not let you continue, let alone whatever the fuck's going on in here.
So at some point, James Earl Jones is like, I need to talk to you, Mark, and he thinks it's over. He's like, I know what's going on, and blah, blah, blah. He's like, okay. He's getting ready to confess and come clean, and he's like, I just remember this from that Vader Tapes YouTube thing. It's like, I want to continue this, the level of black representation on the committee. Will you become part of the Justice League?
And like, he is about to be sworn in to be canonically black at this point.
Yeah. So he confesses to Radon Chong that he's actually white. His parents know that. Like, what's her name? Jan Levinson Gould takes her fine ass out onto a ledge and Leslie Nielsen sees that.
To her credit, she looks like that woman didn't age between this and The Office. She looked exactly the same.
Leslie Nielsen gets mad that her his daughter is race bending or whatever, so he decks Mark in the gut.
Also, The Office fucked up. The Office should have done a Soul Man reference and had Michael in brown face.
That would have been
so funny.
So now we're having this trial scene that's not really a trial, and then all of a sudden there's star witness.
This trial scene is very confused. Like, I literally had to rewind the movie. I was like, it turns into M. Sorry, it's a hell of a reference there.
But Fritz Lang reference.
But, like, it's very weird. Like, it was like Whiplash. Where I was like, what is going on? Anyway.
So Mark then appears from the top, and I guess he skipped a dose because now he's instantly back to being white.
And he has de-blacked his hair.
He's back to his pompadour.
This is one of the other jokes, fucking Gordon Gekko. One of the other jokes that made me laugh though, because they cut to the guy that he played basketball against, and he's like, oh, now it makes sense. And then they cut to Jan, and she's like, oh, now it makes sense because he has a little dick. I was like, aha, funny.
Yeah, it's good. So, and then she was dating at this point a Native American, and she was like being an ally there too or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know if we touched on it, but she's like a I don't even know, she's like the 80s version of somebody that's woke, because she's like dealing with like I don't know what would be the word, like philanthropic studies, societal studies or whatever.
Yeah.
She wants to write about like the plight of the black man
and all this stuff. Getting piped by every minority.
Yeah. she's just a fetishist. Like, that's all it is too. Yeah. Like, so anyway, so now the jig is up. It's time for him to face the music, and everyone basically forgives him. Like, everyone, like James Earl Jones, like, you know what?
You've learned what it's like to be black.
Dude, that literally, his reaction to this whole thing is so fucking ridiculous. Because you got to understand, in the rest of this movie, for those of you that haven't seen this, he is like a stern asshole. He's yelling at people in class that don't like know every piece of like law history. Like,
he is like 60 years old teaching at Harvard Law in 1986, which means when he went to law school, people were probably spitting on him and riding him piggyback to their classes. So he's been through a thing or two.
And he's just riding. But he's like, literally just like, Mark is like, I'm sorry, guys, go ahead.
But he's riding like Radon Chong and Mark. He's like,
right,
I expect you guys to work harder and do better. We will not be friends.
Yeah, but then he finds out that this guy has been in blackface the whole time. He's like, yeah, you know what? GG's, buddy.
Right on. I would have thought he would have burned the place to the ground.
But then C. Thomas Howell has to one-up black him, and he's like, I don't really know what it's like to be black, because I can change whenever I want to. You don't have the opportunity. He's like, damn, you're right. You're better at being black than I am.
Yeah, no, yeah, you've trumped his blackness. Like, it's amazing.
Did we look it up? A white person wrote this, I assume, right?
It would have to be. Well, it was written by.
Yes, DJ.
Yeah.
It was written by Carol Black.
Oh, shit.
Oh.
Not just a clever name.
No. She went to Swarthmore and UCLA, so who knows where she lands on this.
I looked her up. She is very white. She's incredibly white. Also, She was a writer on The Wonder Years and Ellen. She
created The Wonder Years, yeah.
No shit. That's crazy.
So fun facts. So now we're getting to fun facts now, but anyways. So now everyone's forgiven Mark.
That's so fucking weird. You write Soul Man and then you create The Wonder Years.
Ellen, she did for lesbians what she did for black people.
It's so weird.
So now everyone's forgiven. You're allowed to continue your studies. He's got to pay for it himself, despite the fact that his dad's like, I'll pay for it. He's now an ally. He's punching out racists and he's working in the cafeteria. And that's Soul Man.
Only punching out racists because Radon Chong is super hot. And also, she is like, the question is, how do you feel about interracial relationships? Not, hey, you are the biggest, like, you went to scientific lengths to lie about shit and steal my scholarship. I'm not going to GG's on that one. Like, that doesn't work for me.
all is forgiven so quickly in this movie.
Yeah, well, her kid is super cute.
The kid is adorable.
So, so he goes on to become Thurgood Marshall. So now, the fun fact, the guy who directed this movie directed Friday the 13th Part 2, Friday the 13th Ooh, Part 3, House.
House.
He also directed My Father the Hero, Halloween H2O 20 years later.
What a career.
Lake Placid, and 2008's Day of the Dead.
Also,
but not House kinda, the Second Story.
We kind of glossed over it, but the one of the most disturbing parts of this movie for me is the so once Mark comes out as white to Radon Chong, she's like, I don't know about an interracial relationship. And it's like, you were in a, like, I know her character.
What's is Christmas gonna, like?
Like, her, to have a mixed race actor say that is so fucking weird. Like, yeah. I don't know. It just seems very, like.
Do you think it was supposed to be tongue in cheek? Or do you think it was think just.
So. I don't think so.
It's written for a black actress. They're like, this is still 1986. So we gotta, like, not, they can't be too black.
You're black enough, I guess. But, like, it's so, like. I don't know. I know I'm like doing the thinking for her, but she had to be uncomfortable with that fucking dialogue. It seems very, I don't know. I was like, I was
uncomfortable with the dialogue. Yeah, and I'm white.
It was just like, I don't know. There was also some funny lines early on, like where Mark is talking over with his buddy about being black, and he's like, "It's the '80s. It's the Cosby generation." Everybody loves black. America loves black people.
Yeah, it's like, that didn't age well. No. It's like if the movie was made in the '90s. Like Sean Puffy Combs is very popular. Everyone loves R. Kelly.
But yeah, that is Soul Man, a mistake of a film. I don't even. I mean, it's earned its reputation. I mean, again, like it's just so. Misguided, like I don't understand,
but not like incompetent. I mean, it has some editing weirdness and they kind of jump to stuff.
No, it's a professionally made film, it's not like it's not made poorly.
It's misguided, but it's not malicious.
It's kind of like just one of the guys. I was talking to Goggs, do you remember that with Terry Hatcher or whatever? Yeah,
like if you like. It's trying to be a think piece that's like, it's like the most misguided allyship of all time. Like it's trying to be.
It's like provocative, but it's like provocative in the same way that like if your penis just fell out on the subway.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's the weird thing is like we've talked about throughout the movie, like it tries to have like this progressive message, but like you can't. Do it the way they did it.
That's the rules.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just so, like, how did they think this was going to play? And again, like, what makes it worse is that the, like, I don't know, the level of stupidity that everyone has to have in this movie about him being black, like, none of the black characters in the movie are like, you're not black. Like, they should have made. I have eyes.
They like, should have for verisimilitude. They should have just made all the black actors white people in this terrible makeup.
You do like a Takashi Miike thing, or just
Well, what was funny is at the very end where he's like, "Hey, I'm white." Like the black guy he was playing basketball against, like looks at the camera, is like, "Oh,
right." Everybody feels that way. Again, like his disguise is so foolproof, his parents don't recognize him. It's upset. It's totally absurd.
It was kind of funny where he's like, "Mom, Dad, I'm black now."
Doesn't the mom like faint something when he says that?
It is legitimately insane.
It's a weird ass movie. It really is a weird ass movie. Certified weird ass movie.
Certified weird ass movie.
Do we have anything else to say before we get into
let's get to the score.
Sean.
Six.
Oh, that's correct.
It's memorable and watchable, and I did laugh a lot sometimes when I shouldn't. Probably most of the time when I shouldn't. But it is certainly a memorable movie, and like everybody's leaning in real fucking hard.
The cognitive dissonance of James Earl Jones's performance talking to this guy in like the weirdest blackface ever, like how he didn't break the whole time is amazing. Like he should have won an Academy Award for this.
Do you think that like while they were filming it at some point, James Earl Jones, like, do you think like C. Thomas Howell like looked at James Earl Jones and was like, I'm so sorry. Like, I don't.
Well, that's, I couldn't stop thinking about that, dude, the whole time, right?
I think maybe they told James Earl Jones this guy was actually black. Like, they, nobody tell James what this, it's like George C. Scott in fucking Dr. Strangelove. Like, just lie to him.
Oh. Now, that is funny. That is very funny.
But yeah, it's a six. Like I can't go any lower because I did enjoy myself watching this movie. It is horrendously wrongheaded, and like it's stupid. But like, yo, I think we should buy an ocelot. Is really funny.
Really funny.
Like I don't know.
There's a couple of funny lines.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a great time watching it with Sean. Like, yeah. It was like
I wish I watched it with you guys. I would have had more fun.
Me too. On that note, TJ.
I'm gonna echo Sean. It's a six. I mean, it's bad, and it's memorable. I'm not gonna forget this fucking movie.
Mm-mm.
But like, it's fun to talk about. So that's got to count for something, right? It's a movie now that I am embarrassed to ever bring up around normal people because I'm gonna look like it's like you bring up this is like bringing up fucking a Birth of a Nation. Like it's like
or like a Película de Snuff,
right? Like so
on honest question, like if you're in a conversation with somebody and they bring up this movie, do you chime in and say, yeah, I've seen it?
When would that happen?
I mean, I would, but I'm a lunatic. But also, Sean, you just gave me a great idea. We should come up with a list of great scenes from awful movies, and that Película de Snuff is always funny to me. But yeah, I don't know, man. Like, the movie is, like, painfully competent. Like, it's not poorly made. It's not poorly acted. It's not particularly funny. It's got, like, I don't know how I would. It reminds me of a lot of like mid-tier 80s comedies. Like, there's nothing like that stands out about it, but it's also not like great. You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of there.
It's a mid-tier 80s comedy with a guy walking around in blackface.
Yeah, it's wild.
It is nuts.
But yeah, it's a six for me, dog.
Gogs.
Yeah, it's also a six. Like,
Mark of the Beast.
I thought I was gonna hate it, and like the movie's going on. I look at Sean like, this isn't like it's problematic, but I am enjoying myself. So what do I do with this knowledge? And it's just sort of like a weird piece of cinema history. It's so insane that this got made. Like, this deserves a documentary. Like, I would like a Electric Boogaloo. Like, what's the one about Making Dust Till Dawn? Like,
Oh, a Full Tilt Boogie.
Yeah, I want the behind the scenes documentary of this movie from conception until release. Like, I want to know what the hell and how the hell and like in whose mind was this a good idea?
I you know, there really does need to be a documentary about this. Like, I would love to watch a documentary about this. I said it briefly, but C. Thomas Howell was offered this movie. Like, every A-list,
it to, like, Tom Cruise or some shit.
Yes, Tom Cruise, Val Kilmer. Like, it was like a who's who of, like, 80s celebrities, and they're all like, yeah, no. Like, yeah, and you know, of course they did. Like, and they thought this was going to be, like, a star-making vehicle. And yeah, no.
New World Pictures. Brings you soul,
yeah. Also,
man.
I haven't thought about New World Pictures in forever, but great logo, great Killer movie logo. Company logo.
Yeah, we said the same thing. It's like top a tier. Carrollton or a
Ryan Carolco. Gog's got me a Carolco shirt. I wear that all the time.
You got me one too. Yeah,
nice. I love a good.
Or no, mine movie. Was Canon. I'm sorry,
I got you a Canon. Yeah,
love
yeah.
Canon's logo. I feel like I don't really think of like studio. They don't really have that kind of,
I guess
well, there's so many fucking production companies now. Like Bad Robot's the only one I can think that's modern that I could identify.
And everybody now has those stupid ass like 3D animated title card. I hate all that shit. Go back to the old school.
I do like a good Columbia. I like a good TriStar. I like a.
I mean, the classics.
One fucked me up the other 20th
Century
day,
Fox is great.
I think it's MGM now, but it's like it says an Amazon company. I'm like, did you really have to add that on there? Like, you could have just fucking left it alone.
Everything's an Amazon company. What do you want from us? All right. Well, I have a pick because I'm up next on the roster.
Yeah, I'm dying to know. So who's the thread?
The thread is Rachel Don Chong.
Is it Black Rain?
It is not.
Oh,
it is. This is.
Is it Commando?
It's dark comedy action crime thriller. Mask of Death, starring Lorenzo Lamas.
Oh my god.
Lorenzo Lamas, Radon Chong, and Billy D. Williams.
Oh my god. What's it called? Mask of Death?
Mask of Death. 1996's hour and 29 minutes. Mask of Death. While attempting to flee from the FBI, the criminal Frank Dalio kills Detective McKenna's wife, Rachel. McKenna himself is shot in the face by a professional killer, Lyle Mason.
Shot in the face.
Who dies in a car crash shortly thereafter. The FBI pursues McKenna to undergo facial surgery and take the place of Lyle Mason in order to find Dalio and the valuable microchip.
Oh, my God.
God, I hope I can find this.
Woo! Oh, it is. You can rent it on Amazon for $5.
What year did it come out?
1996.
I will find it. Don't worry. And you said it's starring Lorenzo Lamas?
Lorenzo Lamas, Radon Chong, and Billy D. Williams.
All right. Well, we got that to look forward to.
All right, boys.
All right, everybody. That's the show. Right. You know what to do. Eat that ass, and it better be your own.
Hey.
And I don't know, donate to black charities because
this is
an abomination.
Right. Give some,
you owe them. You actually, we all owe reparations to black people after this. Good lord.
All right, boys.
All right, see you, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.